divorce her. So that is why they need to be patient, so the matter would be clear whether they are pregnant or not. And then they claim that, okay, in our time, with the technology that we have, it could be, tested through technologies, and the day after divorce or demise, scientists can tell you whether that lady is pregnant or not. So with these technologies, why people still should keep Idda? There are a couple of points that we need to take into consideration. First of all, when it comes to the philosophy of Islamic laws, I think I have mentioned this point in many sessions that for sure all the Islamic laws, they have wisdom and they have philosophy, but it doesn't mean that we are able to know all the philosophies for all the details of the Islamic laws. With the help of the narrations and with rational arguments, we may find some of these philosophies for the Islamic laws, but there might be others which we are unaware of, and maybe in future we may come to know more. So we shouldn't expect to know about all the philosophies of all the Islamic laws. This is a very important point. But then,
so it's not necessary to know that the lady is pregnant or not.
My point is that maybe it's not the only reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe there are some reasons that we are unaware of, and there are a couple of points that which confirm this point. Now, this is true that according to some narrations, one of the reasons for keeping Idda is to clarify whether that woman is pregnant or not. But we see that in some cases, although that woman cannot be pregnant at all, but Islam says that still those women should keep that period of Idda too. For example, we may think of a lady who is barren. She cannot give birth to a child. She's barren, but still Islam says that you need to keep Idda. Or for example, imagine that a man and a couple, they live separately for a couple of years and then they get divorced. Still Islam says that that lady needs to keep Idda. This is referring to the fact that at least pregnancy is not the only reason, is not the only philosophy. If it was the only philosophy, then in these cases Islam should have said that there is no need for keeping Idda.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Insha'Allah, insha'Allah, you'll find your way.
Now, the second point is that,
can it be said that Islam at that time had the, actually, due to the lack of the, let's say, advanced instruments, actually verdict such a thing, and now today we are reaching to this conclusion, now that we have this, let's say, instrument, and we are in a state to judge it better in no time?
As I mentioned, this is not the only philosophy, because at that time, if pregnancy was the only reason, why Islam says that even for barren women or for those wife and husband who lived separately for a couple of years, still they need to keep Idda. This
Very
means
true.
That the issue of pregnancy is not the only philosophy.
So there are some other reasons behind that.
There might
Very
be
true.
One of the philosophies, but it's not the only philosophy. Second of all, when it comes to today's technology, I think even all the listeners can agree that at the end of the day, in all the cases, there is a chance of mistake, and we cannot ignore that. At least in our time, when it comes to deciding about a woman's pregnancy, in some cases, although they have gone for many tests, the result has been wrong, and later it is clarified. But let's go to other philosophies which still apply today. And that is why we believe that pregnancy is not the only philosophy for keeping Hidda. Maybe the most important philosophy for Hidda is that we know that in the religion of Islam, in most of the cases, that divorce is called Rajai, meaning that during that period, the man can return and they can renew the life again with the return of the man, of the husband, as if no divorce has happened at all. I mean, they do not need to recite those formula for marriage again. Mm-hmm. As soon as the man returns and he expresses that he regrets, then they can renew the life again. So it seems that this period of Idda is a period of rethinking about the situation, about the conditions, because sometimes, I mean, both man and wife, they decide to separate and to do divorce because of some trivial and minor issues. But then Islam says that, okay, for that lady, Islam says that wait for 3 months or for 4 months, and during that month, and it has happened a lot, those ladies who now are in new situation, I mean, without any husband, without any relation, they come to this understanding that it would be much better for them not to get divorced. So the period of Idda is a very good solution from an Islamic perspective for a kind of peace and reconciliation and return of that man toward the woman as well. True. As I mentioned, in many cases, for various reasons, we see that both men and women rush toward divorce. Divorce happens, but Islam says that, okay, this is your right. Mm-hmm. But then Islam says to that woman that wait for 3 months or for 4 months.
And there is also a possibility of them regret for what they did and the decision that they made.
Yeah, exactly.
True.
So I believe that because of the fact that the institution of family is very respected in the religion of Islam,
and the hatred of divorce as well,
exactly, it's highly discouraged. This period of Idda is a chance for both man and woman to think. Let me refer to another point, that according to the religion of Islam, during this time, the man still should take care of the wife and continue to give her the sustenance. Mm-hmm. Even according to many scholars, she needs to stay in the house of that man. This is very interesting.
Yeah.
And which means that Islam does not want this institution to be demolished altogether. No. Islam says to that woman that you have all the right to continue to even live in the house of that man, although you are not mahram to each other. You cannot have any intimate relationship. Mm-hmm. But, and at the same time, you cannot get married to another husband, to another man, which means that for at least 3 months you have the chance to, you are provided that by that man, but you have no relationship with him. So it's a good opportunity for both of them to think more. When you are alone, when you do not have that relation anymore, so at least if there is a possibility for them to regret and to come back to life. And some people, they because they rush toward divorce, they do not think about the conditions and what will happen to the children.
Mm-hmm.
This time is a good time to think about that aspect of life too.
Can I ask a question here?
Sure, please.
There are some ways that some people suggest some ways to shorten this period. Possible to shorten this period due to some, let's say they use different pills and to shorten this period, is it allowed in Islam or not?
No, it's not allowed, because as I mentioned, we are not talking about pregnancy as the only philosophy. We are talking about divorce and not demise. Because for demise, the Idda is 4 months and 10 days.
So there are different terms of Idda, yes.
But when it comes to divorce, it's been mentioned that it's 3 periods of menstruation,
yeah,
and being clean from that. Then, according to some scholars, it might be shortened through some pills, but there might be a difference of ideas. For that, people need to refer to the scholars that they follow.
Religious authority that they are following.
Related to that, I mean, a specific hadda, which is related to divorce.
But as for the day, demise and passing away of the husband,
no,
it needs to...
4 months and 10 days. Yeah.
Very true. So it cannot be shortened anyway.
Still, people can refer to the religious authority, but as far as I know from Islamic jurisprudence, it is mentioned to be 4 months and 10 days, and it cannot be reduced. Mm-hmm. So the main point that I like to share is the fact that, especially the women after divorce, they suffer more than men, because I mean, mentally speaking and psychologically speaking, I mean, women are symbols of feelings, and I mean, after divorce, they may suffer more than men. So keeping hadda, I mean, Islam does not want women just to go to think about another marriage and getting married to another man. So the period and the term of hadda is a good opportunity, not only for women, but also for men to reconsider their decision, and maybe they will return to the life and continue living together, inshallah.
Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, for your beautiful explanations, and your respected listeners who are staying tuned and listening to IRB English Radio with the series of Q&A and Islamic beliefs from IRB English Radio. I hope you enjoyed it, and he will join us again in our upcoming session.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news, artistic news, with delight.
Sub-zero temperatures in the Midwestern U.S. haven't held anglers back from participating in the world's largest charitable ice fishing contest. Some 10,000 people from across the world gathered in the state of Minnesota to put their ice fishing skills to test. They dug thousands of holes in Gull Lake in a matter of hours. Some $200,000 in prizes were up for grabs in the contest. The volunteer-led annual event has so far raised about $4 million for 67 charities since it was first held in 1991. Beryl Carr is a special volunteer at a hospital in London. What makes her special, you might wonder? Well, the fact that she celebrated her 100th birthday last month. Carr has been volunteering in Ealing Hospital for more than 18 years. She works in the hospital's cafe and says her work is her lifeline. This incredible 100-year-old lady says she enjoys helping those who are not as fortunate as she is, and that she has no intentions of retiring. The hospital staff say her presence has been very motivating.
Many of us look at her. She's always got a smile on her face, a swagger as she walks. And you come back from a clinic or a ward round, you're absolutely tired, and she just inspires you as soon as you see her.
Even the coronavirus pandemic has not stopped Carr from volunteering. Born in a nearby town, Carr says she moved back to the neighborhood more than two decades ago after the death of her husband. When asked about the secret to her long and healthy life, she refused to answer, saying she's not planning on revealing that secret. A surprise in a Chinese zoo ahead of the Lunar New Year. 15 rare golden tigers make debut in front of excited fans. A large group of visitors gathered in China's Yellow River Delta Zoo to watch the rare animals. This zoo is the largest breeding base for golden species of tigers across China. The animals are being strictly protected amid fear surrounding their extinction. The golden tigers are a variant of Bengali tigers with rare color variations, including black strips. they are no longer extant in the wild.
The most powerful telescope ever built in the world is now at its final destination in space. After traveling for nearly 1 month, NASA's James Webb Space Telescope has reached its final parking spot in space, which is approximately 1 million miles away from Earth. The mission of the tennis court-sized telescope is to explore the cosmos and better understand the early days of the universe. The $10 billion telescope will also carefully monitor faraway exoplanets and study the atmospheres of planets outside our solar system. It's more advanced than NASA's iconic Hubble telescope. The streets in the Taiwanese capital are decorated vividly to welcome the Year of the Tiger beginning on February the 1st. Residents are using tiger sculptures and totems to adorn the streets of Taipei. Shops are booming as people head out to buy special couplets ahead of the new year, also called the Spring Festival. Many are hoping they can completely defeat COVID-19 this year, as celebrations were scaled down due to the pandemic last year. The Chinese New Year is celebrated by almost 2 billion people across the world, though mainly in Asia. There are 12 animals representing each lunar year on the Chinese calendar. This year's zodiac is the tiger, a symbol of strength and power. The National Zoo in Washington is now home to a new quill-covered resident, the second offspring of a porcupine family. Zoo staff reported the birth of the porker pet earlier this month during a snowstorm. They say they are awaiting a DNA analysis to reveal more information about the baby porcupine. Its brother is now 4 years old. The two siblings are the fourth generation of this family to live in the zoo's mammal house. These animals are born with the ability to climb and look almost identical until they are 6 months old. Natives of South America, these creatures are one of the 18 porcupine species that exist in the world today. The house in Colombia has become a hotspot for tourists. It's built in a unique way, and if you want to enter the house, you have to first walk on the ceiling leading to the door. The upside-down house is named Casa Loca and is located in Guatavita, a short distance from the capital, Bogota. Tourists can be seen walking around taking pictures of this exceptional structure. Many say it fills them with joy to visit such places. Some tourists say this has provided them a chance to gain some relief from the struggles of the pandemic.
We've come from a pandemic. We've emerged from a lockdown. So this helps people have a moment of relaxation with the novelty that we did not have. You have fun while snapping photos. It puts your mind at ease.
The Austrian creator of Casa Loca says he first got the idea to build a house when he was visiting a similar place in his country back in 2015. He says his grandchildren were stunned by the creation, and that's why he decided to make an upside-down house in Colombia, where he lives now. He says people initially thought he was mad, but he decided to accomplish his plan anyway. The pandemic slowed him down a bit, but he proudly inaugurated the place 3 weeks ago.
Iran has won the first title in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championship. Saman Kujuri has more.
Talented Iranian children have ranked first in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships, which was held online. Children in five different age groups, including age 5 to 7 as group A, 8 to 9 group B, 10 to 11 group C, 12 to 14 group D, and 15 or older in group E, annually attend the contest solving multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, cube root, fractions, time, and etc. 572 students from 21 member states participated at the event.
This year, Iranian students have won the title of Champion of the Champions in two categories. Moreover, they won titles in all categories, including Champion of Champions titles, Champion titles, First Winners, and the Second Winner titles. In 2023, Iran will host the 22nd edition of the Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships.
The Smart Kids Institute holds a national competition annually in August to select members of the Iranian team for attending the PALMA Global Abacus Championships. Children from 17 to 13 years of age take part in the competition to solve some 7 mathematical test sheets using abacuses.
I am 12 years old. I have won the first title in this round of the international competitions. I have been practicing with abacus for 4 years. In the competitions, we had to solve multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, and etc.
My math teacher encouraged me to learn abacus 5 years ago. Abacus and mental arithmetic skills had great impact on my mental growth and helped me a lot in my math lessons.
The championship, organized by a non-profit organization established in 1999, is an example of what can be achieved with early intervention in abacus math and mental arithmetic education.
The purpose of the competition is to allow for observation of mental arithmetic skills from countries around the world and to promote related education to find new talents in this field. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Traveling around the world is a wish a lot of people have, but never actually get the chance. However, the Belgian-British girl has achieved that feat at only 19. Zora Rutherford flew back home on Thursday to a crowd made up of family members, friends, fans, and journalists. She completed her odyssey after just over 5 months traveling over 52,000 kilometers. Zara is the youngest female in the world to fly around the globe. She achieved this using a microlight aircraft, which weighs only 325 kilograms and has very low fuel consumptions. That's absolutely amazing. Let's take a listen.
The plane obviously is a bad for the environment. I'm not trying to claim that it is. But I have chosen one of the best aircraft to do it with. The fuel consumption is amazing. For this whole trip, it's used the same amount of fuel as a Boeing uses in about 10 minutes for the whole trip around the world, which I think puts things into perspective. Obviously, it is bad, but I'm really trying to minimize my impact as much as possible.
Zora says the scariest part of her trip was flying over the frozen expanse of Siberia, a place with no human habitation close by. The teen adventurer also had to deal with different countries' health restrictions. Zora had to take multiple PCR tests on her journey, while China's COVID-related regulations meant she could not use the country's airspace. Now, Zora says she is glad she can stay in one place for a few months. Who knows what her next adventure will be? In the world of art, a Japanese artist named Sachi is creating incredibly realistic felted wool portraits of cats.
Sachi calls her artworks Wakuneko, which directly translates to frame cat. Her work is highly popular and she has more than 600,000 followers on different social media platforms. Each portrait takes a whopping 1 month to complete. The crafting process starts with Sachi looking at dozens of photos of the cat she wants to replicate. Then she prepares the required materials before preparing the foundation and mounts the felt onto it. The most difficult part of the job is making the subject's eyes. According to Sachi, it is also the most special stage.
I think that the moment when the cat's spirit enters into the artwork can be presented through the eyes. In that sense, I have been very particular about how to make the eyes.
Sachi's portraits have inspired people around the world to adopt homeless cats. Now she hopes to hold an exhibition showing various cats, including ones with physical handicaps, in order to inspire more adoptions of shelter cats.
The Indian administered Kashmir has the world's only floating post office, a 200-year-old houseboat, and a famous Dal Lake in Srinagar. Set up during the British rule in India, the post office has survived throughout the years because of its charm. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt has more.
The Indian administered Kashmir was once a princely independent state, out of bounds for outsiders. As the ruler of Jammu and Kashmir disallowed non-locals to own property in this picturesque region. During the British rule in the Indian subcontinent, many Britons tried to find an alternative way of living in Kashmir. Thus, houseboat on the world-famous Dal Lake came into existence. Today, the lake is a home to hundreds of such boats, which are a major attraction for tourists around the globe. This one is a unique boat, the only floating post office in the whole world. This is a 200-year-old boat built by the British. It has truly stood the test of time as it still functions.
Post office, Dal Lake.
This is not an ordinary post office. We're standing on a heritage property. I've enjoyed my work since the very first day I came here. It's a unique experience to be working here. And every day, I get the chance to meet people from different corners of the world.
The boat is not limited to postal services. It also has a small museum where colorful stamps from the 1980s are put to display, along with a collection of rare philately stamps. The post office is a hot tourist destination in the region. Locals also come to this post office to send postcards to their loved ones, inviting them to visit Kashmir.
Floating post office.
In the age of technology, electronic mails, e-cards and other internet applications have made it extremely easy for people to communicate. But sending a postcard from this floating post office gives one a really different feeling.
The floating post office underwent reconstruction in 2011 and is currently a part of the Indian postal system. Recently, the office started offering banking services, thus attracting more locals.
I have opened an account here for my daughter. It's hassle-free and this place suits my mind. It's not like the usual offices. Visiting this place with kids is like a trip.
Yet another attraction of this post office is this souvenir shop, from where everyone can buy postcards, stamps, traditional crafts and greeting cards.
This floating post office in Kashmir's Dal Lake is like a time machine. It brings people back to 2 centuries ago and shows them the history of the beautiful region. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه
إلا من لا يصارع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being. A brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: لا تجعلن ذرب لسانك على من أنطقك، وبلاغة قولك على من سددك.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Imam Ali alayhi salam stated, "Do not try the sharpness of your tongue against him who gave you the power to speak, nor the eloquence of your speaking against him who set you on the right path."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. So, dear friends, one of the very interesting and beautiful things that we see about the infallible Imams is that their persona is totally universal, meaning their persona is applicable to every age and every time, and no matter how much time passes, this persona of these beautiful infallibles is such that everybody can apply their manners and their behaviors and their sayings in their own personal lives. And the teachings that were taught by these infallible Imams is applicable to us as well. Now, sometimes we kind of wonder, well, what is the biggest sin? Right amongst our friends or perhaps in a conversation with our family members, we tend to wonder or we question each other what we think is the biggest sin. Now, it's interesting that we might have differences of opinion on what exactly the biggest sin is. For example, we could say lying is the biggest sin, or we can say cheating
somebody is the biggest sin. Or, for example, we can say slander is the biggest sin, or gossip is the biggest sin. Here we find a very beautiful saying from Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he talks about this biggest sin, and he tells all of us what is this biggest sin. Imam Ali alayhi salam, this truly universal persona, says that a human being's ignorance of their faults is their biggest sin. Dear friends, it's so really amazing and perhaps even a little strange. We would not think that being ignorant of our own faults would be a big sin. But when we look a little bit deeper into this statement of Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course we find that it is true. When an individual, when a human being ignores their own faults, right, this is a big sin. At times we tend to point out the faults of other people quite easily at that too. We say this person has this problem and that person has that problem. And very rarely do we, if ever, do we ever look within ourselves to try to find what are the faults that we have. And so to ignore your own faults, now this doesn't mean to not know. To ignore one's fault is truly the biggest sin. When we are ignorant about our faults, one, we never find out what they are, and thus we can never fix them. Two, if we are ignorant about our faults, that means that we're not bothering to reassess ourselves and evaluate ourselves to see what is wrong with us. And so yes, truly, as Imam Ali says, man's ignorance, a human being's ignorance of their own faults is truly their biggest sin. A beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the truly universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. كل صبح وكل شهر أيام تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاق قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridvi.
And these are the words of Ali, where he says, لا يقاس بآل محمد من هذه الأمة أحد. No one in this ummah can be compared to the family of the Prophet. The problem with Dr. Taher al-Qadri is this. When they put Ali on the same level as others, and that is injustice to Ali himself. And Ali says, لا يقاس. Nobody from the ummah should be brought on the same level as Ali Muhammad. Why? وَلَا يُسَوَّ بِهِمْ مَنْ جَرَتْ نِعْمَتُهُمْ عَلَيْهِ عَبَدًا. The one who is under their obligation cannot ever be equal to them. What is Ali saying here? The blessings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala comes to the ummah through the intermediary of Ali Muhammad. They are the wasitah phase, where they are the link between the grace of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the Muslims. And if they are the link, they are superior to the rest of the ummah. And so it would not be right to compare anyone from the ummah with Ali Muhammad. So Ali Muhammad and Ummat Muhammad are not on the same level. And we don't have to go very far. Look at Salat. In Tashahud, what do? We recite the testimony of Tawheed of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Then we testify to the Nubuwwat of Rasulullah. What do Muslims across the board, what do they do after that? They recite salawat on Muhammad and Ali Muhammad in their namaz. They are worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But nobody can say that I will replace it one day and say Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ashabihi, or Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa azwajihi, or Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ummatihi. No, it has to be Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Imam Ahmad bin Hanbal, the founder of the Hanbali fiqh of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, because of some of his views, people used to say that, oh, he is kind of sympathetic towards Yazid. And he always used to be very defensive on this issue that it is not true. And therefore, his son would ask many sensitive questions of this type. One day his son of Ahmad bin Hanbal, he came to the father and he says, oh my father, who is the best in the ummah after Rasulullah? And automatically, you know, Ahmad bin Hanbal mentioned the name of the first three khulafa, one after another. And the son was waiting to hear the name of Ali as the fourth one. But time passed, there was silence. And so now the son says, what about Ali? Imam Ahmad bin Hanbal says to his son, he says, you asked me about the ummah of Muhammad, and Ali is from Ahl Bayt of Muhammad. Different categories. You were asking me about the ummah and companions, and Ali is not part of that. He is in a different category. He is part of the Ali Muhammad and Ahl Bayt Muhammad. And then Ali goes on to say, Hum asasuddin wa imadul yaqeen. And they are the foundation of religion and the pillar of conviction. إليهم يفيء الغالي وبهم يلحق الطالي. He says Ahlul Bayt are the measure and the standard. The ghali, those who exaggerate issues about Muhammad and Ali Muhammad, they have to stop and come back to them. And those who put down the Ahlul Bayt, they have to move forward and reach to the Ahlul Bayt. Because that is the true criteria and the status and the standard of Muhammad and Ali Muhammad, salawatullah ajmain.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Indian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Shuma dar in qarn mojza kardid. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر خمینی رهبر.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience, and a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This is a program dedicated to the memory of Imam Khomeini. May God bless his great soul. And I'm your host for this program, Ijaz Hussain. Of course, I have my good friend, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi. I want to say salam to him. He's an academic and an Islamic scholar who's given us great insight on various aspects of the character and personality of the Imam. And I'd like to say salam to him and welcome him to the program, first of all.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. This program is basically being inspired by something that you said last week in the previous program. Mm-hmm. Which is, Islam is a complete package. I think those words are very deep, very profound. And it's true, because there is a riwayat I want to mention here from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, who said that in the end times, nothing will be left of Islam except its name. Nothing will remain of the Quran except the cover. Mosques will be full, but there'll be no guidance in them. I think that says a lot about the 21st century, this kind of cafeteria-type Muslim, right? It's very serious. I think there's a crisis there, and I'd like your take on it, sir, immediately.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. What I said was that, when we're talking about Imam, is that he insisted on having the Islam as the complete package that it is.
Exactly.
Not, you know, canceling things out for various reasons, whether it was the issue of Islamic punishments, hudud and qisas, as it came to
absolutely
criminal offenses, which is what some people were trying to do after the revolution, even who people who were Muslim and who prayed and who...
Because it said it wasn't modern.
Because, well, they actually had a more specific reason. They said it's against the charter of human, you know, UN Charter on Human Rights. And, you know, he just said anybody who says that is a kafir.
Exactly.
End of the story.
End of story.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
And so, basically, what I'm trying to say and what I think is important is that, you know, when you want to be Muslim, again, this is not about implementing it all yourself to 100% and all.
No, that's not what we're talking about here.
It is about implementation. So Islam is not just about, you know, knowing the rules or just knowing the aqaid. It's actually implementing Islam in your life.
Yes.
you know, to the extent that you are capable in terms of who you are in society and,
exactly.
and your position and your capabilities and your level of knowledge and so
if
on.
You have faith in something, it has to
right.
have a manifestation.
So we talked about how there's a big difference between somebody who acknowledges all of Islam the way it is in the Quran
exactly.
and the way it is in the Sunnah, but mm-hmm. says that certain parts of it, I don't have the power to do it.
Exactly.
Versus somebody who outright denies certain parts of Islam, even accepting other parts of it. Or who says La ilaha illallah and, you know, says the Shahadatain and yet, you know, denies things like, well, you know, we really don't have prayers five times. You know, just, you know, every now and then during the day, you know, chill out and think about God, that's enough. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, we were talking about the fact that, you know, Islam is a package deal.
Exactly.
And this is important, okay? Don't deny it.
Exactly.
As a package deal. It doesn't mean you have to implement all of it yourself in your personal life
no,
as an individual
no.
or that you have the capability of doing it. That's not what we're saying. We're saying don't deny it as a package deal.
Well, this is why, you
okay?
know, we have this facility, if you like, within Islam to have the complete package, which is your oath of allegiance, isn't there? Because this bayah is not simply about, oh, you know, just for the sake of saying, well, you know, I acknowledge you as a leader or something to that effect. Because in Islam, this means something entirely different. This is a manifestation of your belief.
Right.
So that you're covered. You're basically covered.
Right.
You know, it's like, I don't know, in terms of law, you know, I don't have the Latin, but
right.
yeah, you know exactly what I'm referring to. So, you know, this is what we're saying here. You know, that's something entirely different from somebody who completely denies it.
Right. So, the important point that I'm trying to make and that I want to point out is that, you know, you can't deny certain parts of it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you have to be the one, you know, implementing the hudud or the qisas punishment, or you have to be the one.
No, that's for the state.
Right.
Right.
That's a different issue.
Issue. Yeah.
Just don't deny it. Don't say it's not part of Islam or it's no longer part of Islam.
Yeah. As you said, you know, like somebody who says, well, you know, I deny prayer. I don't think you should pray five times.
Or, you know, the ritual prayer. That's what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Or that says, no, what it meant in the Quran and what
yeah,
they
yeah.
mean is that you just, you know, who says you have to do rakat and you have to do ruku and sujood. And,
sure.
You know, don't deny it. That's
Very
the
good.
Point.
Very good point.
Even if you're not going to do it, don't deny it.
Don't deny it.
Okay? Because that is part of Islam.
It is.
Okay? Just like, you know, jihad is part of Islam.
Exactly.
Don't deny it. Mm. Don't say, you know, we don't have jihad in Islam. We do have jihad in Islam. It's on the same level as prayer
and all the other. Yes.
If you want to take it from the other side, don't deny that there is, you know, zakat and homs,
yes.
Okay? Don't deny it.
Mm.
You might not pay it.
But it's there.
But it's there.
Of course.
Don't say it's not there.
No.
Okay? So, this is the point, and this is the beautiful thing, one of the beautiful things about Imam, is, and this is the job as somebody who is a religious leader,
yes,
especially in the Qibla, is to point out to people where they are, you know, not where they're starting to, you know, stray from the path.
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
That's his job. It's his job to say to you, you know what, your interpretation that, you know, we don't have to have qisas and hudud because of the Charter of the Human Rights, your understanding of Islam is an incorrect one.
Exactly.
That's his job.
That's his job.
He has to say that to you.
Mm-hmm. He has to correct it.
Right. Because that's not, you know, it doesn't say you do qisas and hudud or you execute a murderer, you know, if the UN approves. That's not what it says in the Rivayat.
That's right.
Right?
That's a very good way of putting
right?
it. Exactly.
That's not what it says.
No,
it says in the Quran.
I didn't see, you know, like Alif Lam, Mim, and then UN.
Right.
No, it doesn't work like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we don't have
like
Surah
that.
UN, right?
Don't have
right? So, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, you do maslahat, you do,
exactly.
you try to work, you know, with the realities that exist in the world at that time, but you don't deny, you know, a basic aspect of your religion.
Well, I mean,
and you see, this is the thing. Laws, ahkam, are a basic part of Islam.
Exactly.
Anybody who denies them as a concept or individually
is out of the pale of Islam.
You can't deny ahkam.
No.
This is the problem that we have. Our view of religion is so influenced
ignorant.
By the Western.
Yes, that's true. It is influenced
and by
very
this
much,
kind
yeah.
of neutered.
Neutered. Yes.
You know,
I like that word.
Christian in the last couple of centuries, the way it became, of where secularism took over, and you know, Christianity was just, you know, on Sunday, and if you just be a good person, and you know, don't get too involved about laws. You know, that's where the Jews. That's the Old Testament. We're New Testament. You know, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
As though, what, the Ten Commandments are not.
I'm not applicable anymore.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
I'm just saying as an example.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what we're saying.
You know that usury is illegal in according to the Bible.
Of course it is, right. And so is drink. So is alcohol as well. I've seen passages where, you know, it is said that anyone who drinks alcohol or practices usury or gambling shall never enter the kingdom of heaven. Never.
Okay.
Okay, so it's real serious stuff here. You know?
Yeah, it's not like, you know...
Yeah, it's not like a...
Well, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, you know that according to the Bible, you have to forgive all debts every 7 years?
Exactly.
Did you know that?
Thank you. Yes.
If somebody owes you money after 7 years, you have to forgive them.
You have to forgive them. Yes.
Yes.
That's wonderful, isn't it?
You know, we have it.
I hope my 7 years is up.
You don't owe me anything.
Thank you.
Right, yes, I forgive you.
Thanks very much indeed, sir.
So
you know, there's great benefit in discussing this subject. Yes.
So,
exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You can't deny laws from religion. You can't separate laws from religion.
No.
A big part of religion, all religions, is laws.
Laws.
Now, what happened in Christianity in the West is that they tried to separate it.
Yes.
And say, well, that part is the state and Caesar. Mm. Unto Caesar, what is Caesar?
Unto Caesar, that's a very...
you know, whatever. Oh, that's
famous stuff. Misquote of right. Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him. Because I'm sure he never said such a thing.
Right. Yeah. And so the point is that when a person like Imam comes, and again, for us, in Ghaibat Kubra...
Yeah.
In the period of the greater occultation, his word is authority. It's hujjah.
Hujjah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, because I want to quote a verse from
the Quran. He's our religious leader.
Exactly. We want to quote a verse from the Quran here, which makes it clear cut. If you have a problem, you have to obey God, you have to obey the Prophet, and you have to obey those who have authority over you.
Right. Which in our case,
in our cases,
we're talking about people who have authority in line of God and the Prophet.
Prophet, exactly.
So it's not whoever has authority over you, which is unfortunately one of the ways that some of the Muslims are interpreting.
I'm misabusing this, yes.
You know, you can't follow God and the Prophet and then somebody who is the polar opposite of that.
The polar opposite of that,
you
exactly.
know, that God would not command you to that.
No.
This is not what God would say in his Quran.
No.
If he wants you to follow
the UN either. You know, so, right. Yes.
You know, or you know, whoever.
Whoever, yes.
So, this is one of the great things that Imam was teaching us.
Exactly.
And he was able to establish this very firmly, is in an era and in a time where humanity was getting very confused about...
Yes.
You know, what is religion?
What is religion?
Is it just this emotional thing, which is what Christianity had become? This thing that's just related to, you know, when you feel sad or when you feel happy or giving praise and, you know, asking for grace, whatever.
Mm.
Okay? Or is it actually, you know, a package, a real thing that is there to... Because, you know, we've said this before, and it really is good if we keep reading. What is Islam? Islam is the package, the software, the operational program that Allah has given for the perfection of your soul.
Soul. Thank you.
When I mean your soul, that means you, because that's what you are.
Yes, exactly.
This body will go.
Yes.
You know, this body is not you.
No.
It's the vessel in which your soul is developing for the next, inshallah, 100 years.
Yes.
One day it will, you know, turn into dust.
Mm-hmm.
Your soul is eternal.
Eternal.
Okay, this is the religious view of a human being.
Being, yes.
And when I say religious, I don't only mean Islam. I mean all those, you know, major religions, Abrahamic religions, whatever you want to call them, monotheistic religions.
Yes.
Even non-monotheistic religions, even some parts of Hinduism, whatever. You are a soul. It's eternal.
That's right.
Okay, this body is a vessel.
Is a vessel.
Okay. So what is Islam? It's Deen al-Haq.
Hmm.
You know, it says the religion with God is al-Islam. This is what the ayah says.
Says exactly.
You know, this is it says the religion within the Allah.
In Allah.
right? It means with God.
With God.
The religion with God, the one that is with God, is Al-Islam. Islam. It's not Islam. Al-Islam. Islam.
And this is why we say it's not Christianity, it's Islam.
Right? Because they say, well, totally Islam different. Isn't that a general term? It means, you know, those who submit, isn't that what all religions were? And we're like, yes. If we say Islam in the sense that, you know, those who submit to God, yes. You know,